Hello and welcome to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. This week, Mossy, Al and myself reflect on that disappointing result in France. Plus, I sit down with New Scotland Women head coach Phil Doyle. Al, Mossy, a number of days have passed now and we've had a chance to digest that match with France at the weekend. How do you sum that game up?
I probably, watching it live, Chris was doing comms on the TV, I think, still believe on a bigger picture that, you know, there's plenty of time to fix it. Like, it's the first hit out. Only once every 4 years do you play a test match as your first pre-season game, and there was so much rustiness in the team. So I still believe, bigger picture, that there's plenty of time to fix it, but like, deeper dive into the performance. I've heard from Gregor over the last few days, we heard from certain players, it wasn't anywhere near where it needs to be. Now, that's a concern, but the good thing about these games is there's a way to fix it this week.
I agree with Al. The fact that it's the first game of the season is always going to be difficult. Usually that, I said last week before the game, usually your first game of the season is a hit out for 20 minutes or, you know, a training game. So when, you know, and yes, the lads have trained hard and they'd had a kind of internal hit outs as well. But when your first game's an international, on TV, away from home against a team who were more powerful and more physical than us on the night, it's always going to be tough. But I kind of agree with Gregor in terms of kind of expected more. I mean, you're not expecting the polished performance. You understand totally that the aim of these games, this series, is to make sure you peak for Rugby World Cup in Japan. So that is the principal kind of goal. But I think definitely expected more in terms of skill execution, so fewer errors, a better application of how fit the players are. But as I say, that comes through playing, and over the next 3 weeks, we'll hopefully see those. Well, I'm sure we'll see those improvements, and it lays the foundations for hitting the ground running in Japan.
You mentioned skill execution there. The word that's been in my mind for the last few days is control. We didn't control the game. We made it harder for ourselves by being turned over, by losing key lineouts, by kicking poorly at times, which just gave the French the opportunity to attack. Now, everybody's talked about how good the French were, and look, they did well on that. Again, as a concern that they took to the first game far better than we did, but we made it easy for them with the skill errors, the lack of control. That's got to be the biggest thing to fix this weekend.
There's a lot of things to fix, isn't there? You know, understandably, but what would you fix first, Al? You know, in terms of if you choose one thing that you could really focus on this week to make an obvious difference from last week to this week, what do you think it would be?
So I think it's a control of the ball, the ball
set
retention.
Piece?
Yeah,
an open play
overall. And I think, like, if you look, it's easy to look at defence. We lost 5 tries, but I believe at times we made it easier for them to attack because we gave them cheap ball, and they're great open ground players. So how do we control the ball? If I'm saying control the ball, what do we do? We probably make sure that the set piece has to be 100%. The scrum is under a lot of pressure. The pitch dug up a lot, so it's difficult to know exactly what's going to come this week.
Just on that before you continue, with the pitch, we saw it clearly, it was tearing up. How difficult is that, being in a scrum, knowing that beneath you there's basically nothing there?
It's tough, and it's probably tougher because the French are dominant. The French scrum was good. So it's harder to be in a defensive scrum with that, because what the guys want to do is they want to dig in, make sure that they hold their ground and get the ball in and out. Yeah. But if the ground's moving away from underneath your feet, then that's very difficult to do. We got penalised more because they were getting a nudge on. Nigel Owens obviously felt with the scrum just before half time that they were going early.
The free kick,
which, you know, at 20 points to 3 at the time and we're under our own post was important. Now, it didn't make the difference that we needed it to make in the second half, but yeah, it's hard. It's really hard, and you've got to try and show. And Stuart McInally was speaking to Nigel Owens regularly and telling him that, you know, his players were doing as much as they possibly could, but it does make it difficult. But going back to the controlling of the ball, it's making sure that we get the balance right between attacking in the right areas, to make sure that we're not just headless, that we're trying just to overwork. I think at times it's really easy at the beginning of a season to do that, where it's just a try harder mentality. We've got to try harder. Whereas actually it's sometimes it'd be about trying smarter. Do you give it that, Mossy?
Yeah, I would. I think if you commit a lot of errors, it's very difficult then to control the game, as you say. There were periods of the game, especially in the first half, after, ironically, after France went ahead, that Scotland had a really good period of maybe 10, 15 minutes. So they did control the ball, they did control the territory. What the reason they didn't get capitalised on it was the last pass, or the final pass, or the execution at the end. And as the game went on, those mistakes seemed to creep in earlier in the phases, or towards the start of the phases, and more regularly. So there were certain elements in the first half that you could see the shape that Scotland were trying to play, and it was putting France under pressure. So, I agree definitely that there have to be fewer errors. There's always going to be errors in games. Mm. But I think as well, the guys will be disappointed with the defence. And it's another one where it is a little bit of early season form. You tend not to trust the person inside you at times, and you get a little bit narrower and a little bit narrower. You think, oh, we need to stay together. And before you know it, you get really narrow, and against a France team who like to play wide, who are quick, elusive runners, they then move the ball a bit wider, and you're lateral, so your tackles are less dominant. Because your tackles are less dominant, it's harder to slow the ball down, so France get quick ball time and time again. So I think naturally you just ebb closer together rather than holding your width and going up straight. So that happens at all points of the season, but I do think it's evident early season, and it's something that will have to be fixed this week.
We got caught, you mentioned defence, so we get caught in the inside for two of the tries, and line breaks as well. That at times is over enthusiasm from somebody taking a line speed up, but also the guys inside just working to make sure they're there, staying square and working as hard as they possibly can.
It's quick ball though, isn't it? Like, from the opposition, and that's what I mean. You need a dominant collision at some point. There was a couple. Jamie Ritchie hit a couple of good ones.
I thought he was excellent, yeah, actually.
And you can see the difference of that. Then it allows the second player to get in to try and slow the ball down, or it just gives everybody else time to reset. But they were kind of few and far between. There's a lot of match fitness in that. As I said, the point about getting quite narrow, and the point that you're playing a team that were better than us on the evening.
And they were up for it as well, weren't they? Right,
everybody is. Yeah. I mean, they started well. Their first try was soft in some ways, but it still takes score. And you could see Raka, who scored the try after the switch with Fofana. It's quite hard to do that as a blind winger. What you want to do is get there really early, especially on your first cap, and he just held his discipline, held his depth, didn't run too early, allowed the switch to happen, and then the ball back inside. So I mean, there was quality in there as well as just a bit of brute force from the French.
Now, we talk about the game, elements on it, but before we do that, I just want to hear from head coach Gregor Townsend after the game.
Well, there's a lot of work to do. We expected a better performance. We go into every game we play, no matter the opponent, with the goal of winning, and we believed as a group, a coaching group and a playing group, that we were well prepared for that game. So obviously that wasn't correct. We missed parts of that first half just from not being in place quick enough to stop France getting quick ball, and then not capitalising on opportunities we did have in the first half. France were very good. They looked like they were in really good condition, match condition for where we are. We know our players are in very good physical condition, but obviously tonight the match conditioning fell short. So we'll be better for that experience, but we've got to be much, much better in terms of performance over the next three games, and then obviously and when we get to Japan. So we will be demanding a reaction from our players. They'll be demanding it. And let's move on to actions and behaviours rather than words, but that'll be the target this week, to show a much truer image of what we're capable of. These games are, first of all, an opportunity to win for your country. Second, to give players match conditioning, players opportunities to make that final squad, but also to look at combinations that can be of benefit for the World Cup. We've currently got six props in our squad. We're either going to take five or six. If we choose to take five, then one of the loose heads will need to cover tight head, or one of the tight heads will need to cover loose head. So the period that Simon was over the loose head, unfortunately, we had just one scrum, and I thought it was quite a harsh call on Xander Fagus in the first scrum on that pitch that was cutting up. With every scrum, he gets penalised. But at least both of them were on the field at that time, and we'll have a look at it and see if we repeat it again over the next two or three games.
Do you kind of agree with what you're saying there?
I agree with lots of it, yeah. You can tell by his voice how disappointed he is. Again, things we've spoken about over the last 2 weeks on the podcast building up to the game is that the fixture is a reward for all the hard work you've put in. You know, throughout the season, you train for 6 days, you play in the seventh, effectively, whereas in pre-season, you train for 3 months and you get a shot that you've been desperate for to play this game to reward yourself for your training, but also to have a reference point as to see if you're improving or not. So for that first game to be as disappointing as it will probably hurt even more, and you can tell that in Gregor's voice. But I do agree with the fact that I think everybody expected more. There were missed opportunities in the first half, and that France were ultimately a lot better than us in the evening.
You talk about the disappointment in Gregor's voice. The thing is the players as well. 3 months in, you're training hard, you get the opportunity to play. There's still cuts to be had. That's going to go down to 31. So there's boys out there that just didn't perform the way they wanted to perform. Now it comes down to the team not performing, but also individuals. So, you know, there would have been a lot of disappointed players on the way back, and it'll be a tough week because some of them might not get the opportunity to fix it this week. They will ordinarily, you know, you hope you get the chance to go back out and fix it again the next game week. I'd expect that Gregor will make a lot of changes, and I think that'll be pre-planned, and that he'll put out a different team this week against France. And then there's an opportunity for those guys to grab it to show that they should be going to Japan.
Yeah, that's a difficult thing for the players who would be disappointed on Saturday evening. If you look at the Welsh guys who played England at the weekend, they lost, you know, they were disappointing at Twickenham the week before. And I think all but two changes. Yep. Gatland kept roughly the same team. And so they won, they beat England and Cardiff at the weekend. So there was an opportunity for the guys who felt as if they'd let themselves down 1 week to get the next week, and got not only that, but they actually got the match fitness as well. It's all very well having 4 games of match fitness, but you only get your match fitness by playing, and I do think it'll be a completely different, a vastly different team this week. So it's never nice. I mean, I remember missing a silly goal kick once on a Friday night for Edinburgh, and I just had to get up on the Saturday morning, come to Murrayfield, put the ball down when I missed it and kick it just to get it out of my system, and that was just
did you get it a second time?
Yeah, it was easy.
Good.
Bad pitches. It was windy, I like, but just even that in your own mind to prove that actually that shouldn't have happened, you can move on, you can shift it, whereas you don't get that opportunity to play the whole game again or to play the next game, and you want it the day after, you want it actually 20 minutes later once you're sitting in a changing room. I want to do that again, I want to get it now, come on, let's, you know, I want to get this done. But not only to wait maybe a week's long enough, but then if you're not involved in the next game week, it's difficult. So you have to probably smash it up a wee bit in training this week, I think.
Yeah. I was in Nice with the team, and it was a 9:06 kickoff. It's a long day before the boys get going. Now the French like to play their games later. I think it's a TV thing, but also because of the heat maybe as well. What effect does that have when you're used to playing a game maybe at 1, 2 o'clock, 5 o'clock maybe latest? Is there much difference for a player playing at that?
Not really. They're very used to it. You sometimes European games, especially if you're a club, you pick up 12 o'clock, half 12 kickoffs, and you're eating your spaghetti bolognese for your pre-match meal at half 9 in the morning. But yeah, the guys just get used to it. Now it is a long day, but it's not any reason or any excuse for the game.
You prepare for it as well. You know, I think when the games used to always be a Saturday at 3 o'clock, it was a bigger shock if you got one that was a Friday night or a Sunday at one. But now that the games fluctuate so much week to week, and the squads and the management and players will work back from the kickoff, so once they know when the kickoff is, if it's a Friday night or a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday lunchtime, they'll figure out their structure, they'll create their structure of the week backwards. So 2 days out or whatever would be a you know, a day off, 3 days out will be your heaviest session, whatever structure they choose. So they're used to it. They'll do their team run at different times, so they'll try and train at the same time as the game the next day and night. You have to try and change your dietary habits as well, because if you think, you know, 9 o'clock, you're usually winding down for most people to get ready to go to bed, and, you know, if it's 9 o'clock kickoff, you're before a game, you're wanting to wind up and reach a kind of your aggressive peak. So it's different, but you train for it and the week and the days by before the game.
I think sometimes it's recovery afterwards that's harder, because if you play a game, you don't sleep. You play a game at 9 o'clock at night. I mean, you play a game at 7 o'clock at night. A lot of guys won't sleep. You know, maybe 2 or 3 hours. Whereas at 9 o'clock, and by the time they get to their bed, it's maybe 2 in the morning, and they're not going to sleep. So that'll make it harder. But again, the coaches and the strength conditioning guys will know that, and they'll look at what comes in for the next couple of days afterwards.
One last point that Gregor mentioned there was the match conditioning. Now, we know the guys are fit, we can see that, but he kind of alluded to the fact that they're going to maybe have a look and see where maybe a change in conditioning. You know, there's different types of fitness, isn't there? You know, if you're a tennis player, you could play for 4 hours at Wimbledon, but you wouldn't necessarily last a full match here at BT Murrayfield. So it's not a question if the guys are fit. Maybe it's more of a making sure they have the right fitness. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, the guys are fit. Like the effort and the work rate that's going on in that pre-season, the guys are in good condition. And what they didn't have was that match sharpness, that match fitness. And you saw, there was a lot of tired bodies out there quite early on as well. You expect that second wind to kick in. The earlier in the season it is, sometimes the longer it takes to get that. One concern is that the French dealt with it a lot better than we did. We don't know what stage they're at in their preparations, because ultimately we're preparing for a World Cup. Now, it is a test match and it's massively important from momentum, but also from the fact that it's an international game of rugby. But again, ultimately we're preparing for that World Cup. So the French might be much further ahead. They might have already had internal games. So it's the next few weeks for me that are hugely important, starting with this week, starting with, you know, coming back to what will be a sold-out BT Murrayfield, and making sure that they turn that performance around. And part of that is fitness as well, because it could be a new group of players. So they've got to show that they've learned the lesson. And I go back to what I said right at the beginning, control the game. We want to play fast, play fast. If we need to stick the ball in a corner, stick it in a corner. If we need to pin them back into their 22 to take the sting out of the game, do that as well. Just make sure we're in charge of the game and not allowing to be dictated to.
Yeah, I'd agree with that point there. It's other than that period just after France scored, we were kind of chasing the game psychologically in the scoreboard, and, you know, like, because I say we got maybe a little bit narrow in defence, and their set piece was giving them, you know, control of the game. So you actually tire more by chasing the game, you know, than they do in a really confident, strong position that France were in. I think the easiest way to sum it up, maybe for some listeners, is, you know, these guys are super fit. Everyone's benchmarked really around the world to similar tests, and you know everybody else's results, and these guys are super fit. They all are. I mean, all the nations say they'll be fitter and stronger than ever have been before, which is probably true. I think there'll be a ceiling on that. I don't know how much fitter the human body can get in terms of the science and the demand on rugby players, but I would imagine rugby players are one of the kind of fittest group, because they have to play for nearly 2 hours. They have to have a speed element and a certain endurance element. There's contact there, so in some ways it's maybe, to sum up for the listeners, you could be really super fit for 15s rugby and you could be super fit for 7s rugby, but it'd be difficult to do both.
Yeah.
So there's different types and patterns of fitness.
Yeah.
As well as the fact that you just need to play matches to kind of bring all the work you've done to life and prove how fit you are.
Just one note on France, they were very good. I think for me their number 9 Dupont was outstanding. Who else stood out for you in that French side?
Oh, he's brilliant. Dupont's been amazing for a long time. I remember watching him in the under 20s World Cup in Manchester, and he plays 9 or 10, and he's if you think back 6-7 months whenever the Six Nations, France were on their knees after that England game. He came on with 20 minutes to go, and just the rugby world kind of stood up and noticed him. But so he's almost carrying the transformation of a nation on his shoulders as well a wee bit. So he is a star. Some of his kicking from hand, some of his attacking, he scored a try, but some of his attack, his defence.
On that, his box kicks from inside his own.
Well, we said that in commentary. He was kicking under pressure from inside his own 22, and under a lot of pressure. Ben Toulis almost got a couple of charge downs. Mm-hmm. Barks, Gilco was close, and he's putting the ball out over the far 10.
And it's not just going out, it's going over the boards at the side as well. So
such a talent. So he's pretty special. Medar played well. One of the kind of older statesmen.
Cracking sideburns as well.
Oh, he's that's good, eh?
DuPont and Lopez for me, what
Camille
they did.
Sharp was brilliant, hooker as well.
Yeah, well, I was going to say the 9 and 10 dictated the game and brought the pack into it. There was a great balance to that French pack. Like, when they needed go forward, they had three or four boys, big boys stepping up close in and winning. Chris talked about it earlier, and winning those collisions. But also, some of the touches, I mean, to be able to bring Pickemoles on, he comes on for a blood replacement and then comes on at 60 minutes.
And Aldrete was probably better.
He was. But you know, when somebody like Pickemoles is coming off the bench, that he's going to bring something. So just their balance, they got the right combination of, you know, the hard go forward as well as some of the softer touches, and they won the collision area. Now, any pack that's winning the collision area is going to give the backs plenty of space.
Not only that, though, if you think Olivon, the number seven, seen as a simple part of the game, is really difficult. Like, his kickoff reception,
outstanding,
unbelievable, to catch so high. Like a back row athletic guy, a bit of height, the skill to be in the right place to get your two lifters to lift you to the height it is under pressure. And he had two or three in a row that were just like world class.
They got the better of the restarts, didn't they? The French, even the one that I think came off the shin from Lopez and ended up landing straight on the 10-meter line, absolutely perfect. And the Scottish boys could only. Can I look at it? I think they expected to land about 3 metres short.
You'll know about drop kicks off the shin, Aldi.
I've seen you hit a few, Mossy. I've seen you hit a few.
And just looking at the World Cup for France, they're in Pool C with England, Argentina, USA and Tonga. That's going to be some group as well, isn't it?
It's a really interesting one. It's you chuck Argentina into that mix. Now, the French would have qualified for that group as third seeds, just on the world standards at the time, I think. They're beginning to hit a bit of form. Somebody said to me they were 40-1 outsiders for winning it. Now, I'm not saying they're going to win it, but I can tell you what.
They could win it.
They've got the ability to win it. It's always with France. It's always with everybody. It's consistency of performance. They were very, very good at the weekend. At times we made them look good, but they were a well-drilled team.
You just expect at some point they'll have a bad game, the French, don't you?
Yeah.
Like, They all fall out. They always do.
Well, the fell out was it 2011? I think they fell out. They stopped training with a coach. Mm-hmm. They just trained on their own in a park and reached the final and really could have won it. And that's kind of underlines the talent they have. They're in a much better place now than they were in 2011. Bringing in Laurent Labitte, Fabien Galthié to work alongside Jacques Brunel, you could see that influence at the weekend. Like successful coaches in the club scene in France, as well as successful players and great ambassadors, so you could see a shift in what they were trying to do. It looked as if there was a bit more harmony, but with France you don't know how long that lasts. But if they get it right, there's absolutely no reason that they couldn't be contenders. And that group with England and Argentina I think are ranked about 11th in the world now, just mainly around the opposition that they play more often than not. Mm-hmm. As the big three in the Southern Hemisphere, of which South Africa are ridiculously strong at the moment as well, mustn't it? But yeah, I think we've said it before as well. We wouldn't be surprised if a team that wins a World Cup actually suffers a defeat in the pool stages at some point. And the pool stages are that hard.
Yeah.
One thing we've not talked about, and we talked about a lot in the lead up to the game, was the fact that the French named their squad really early. So they're 31 now. They were going from June, I believe. Now, I wonder whether that had an influence on the game, and that they would have known who was playing that game potentially further out, mm-hmm. and the combinations would have been far more drilled. If that's the case, then what we should see is a steady improvement from Scotland, because they will begin to narrow that down and have a better idea of the combination. Gregor talked about combinations, a better idea of what combinations he wants to use.
Well, we've got depth in Scotland, greater than we ever have before, but I still don't think it would really compete with France's depth. I mean, they maybe have to pick that squad early, because, you know, the depth of talent they have across their teams, I think, you know, probably the best in the world, would you say? Probably more depth than England?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, I think again, it comes down to consistency of performance with the French guys, but they've got an incredible talent pool. And I suppose the argument would be that by naming it early, those guys were settled and they were known they were on that plane, and it was all about playing well, not a trial element to it.
So what's their mindset this week then, the French? Not that you really worry about opposition, but if you were in the French camp after that convincing win at home, getting a few pats in the back, are they vulnerable this week?
Well, what do they do? So they've got a 31, so they're not going to pick outside that. So they've got, you know, 8 changes that are, you know, available to make within their squad of 23. So you'd expect that their team or their squad will be, well, has to be more similar to last week than I expect Scotland to be. I expect Scotland to be vastly different. So they'll have that match fitness. More of them I expect will have one game under their belt than the Scottish boys. So they've got to come. If you're in the French camp, you've got to come and talk about more of the same. There's plenty of things to work on from their point of view as well. We talked about it was a good performance. It wasn't a complete performance. No. It's never going to be in the first hit out. And it's about, from their point of view, whether they can take that forward. Now, Scotland, they've got more to work on, more to focus on in a week, which makes it a busier week. But, you know, a determination and a need to get it right to try and get the momentum back ahead of the 2 Georgia games.
And one more thing of note about France is they're only playing 3 warm-up games as well. So they're playing us back-to-back and then France at home as well. Italy, not playing themselves. They're playing Italy.
Who won 85-17 against Russia?
Russia, yeah.
So the weekend. And Sergio Parisi is going to his 5th World Cup, which is pretty special. I think there's only a couple that have done that, haven't there? Mauro Bergamasco, maybe. And Brian Lima.
Good knowledge.
I might be wrong. I know those guys have. There might be others, but that's a pretty impressive.
Driscoll go to? Four,
I think. Yeah, but it's pretty impressive to. And it'd still be one of your country's top performers and star players 5 World Cups later.
And remember when Bergamasco played 9?
Ah, yeah.
Against us?
No, it was against England.
It was England.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's done it all.
Some of his passes weren't great.
Left or right, you knew he was running.
I heard the other take on that is that his standoff was too flat. The ball went flying over his head 2 or 3 times. So 3 games, smaller squad to pick from. Did they play Italy at home or away, did you say?
At home at Stade de France.
So this is their only away game, so they'll want to focus that as well. So good challenge this weekend for our lads.
2 positives for Scottish rugby is that we saw 2 new caps in Rory Hutchinson and Scott Cummings. Now, I don't think you played with Scott. I think he just arrived just after your swan song, is that correct?
Took your place off.
He was the reason I retired.
But you know
many other better players. He was in the academy system when I was still playing, and he came in and he did a brilliant first season. Did really well as soon as he got his first game. Went on and, you know, everybody was looking at him as a future internationalist, and he's proven that now. I think he's got something a bit different about him. He's very athletic. Generally, when you look back to Glasgow's final in May, they lost against Leicester, I thought he was the best Glasgow player on the park. I thought he had an exceptional game, and that's for me what's got him the nod ahead of Richard Gray into the squad for the World Cup. He's got an uphill battle to make sure to try and get on that plane, but he certainly didn't do himself any harm at the weekend. I thought he had a good impact.
And Mossy, Rory Hutchinson as well, Northampton Saints, he was involved in the under-20s as well. He actually put in a pretty good performance when he came on, didn't he?
Yeah, he's got something. Rory, he played really well for our age grade system, the 18s and 20s. And he fits what Gregor likes to play. He can play a number of positions and across the kind of midfield. He's a good distributor. He's got an attacking edge. He kicks well. And he does. He's kind of that facilitator with his distribution skills, but he's also an individual attacking talent as well. So, you know, brilliant for these guys to reach their goal. But I know how they'll feel. They'll not just want to be once. They'll want to improve on it and go again and make a big difference over the years. And I'm sure they will.
Moving on to Scotland women now. Earlier this week, I caught up with recently appointed new head coach Philip Doyle. Delighted to be joined now by Philip Doyle, Scotland Women Head Coach. Is Philip all right? Is that okay, Phil?
Yeah, Phil, Goose, Phil? I don't mind.
You said Goose, I'm going to ask you about that, but the nickname Goose, where did that come from?
Oh, back in the 80s, Top Gun.
I thought Top Gun, yeah.
Yeah, it was a Top Gun thing.
So there was a Maverick as well, wasn't
there? There was a Maverick, yeah.
You were Goose.
Yeah, I was the Goose, yeah. And yeah, that's where it all came from. And it just stuck in the rugby.
It's just kind of all around the rugby work landscape now. Yeah. Ireland over here now, Goose. Phil, delighted to have you here. You've been in post since May now at Scottish Rugby. How have you found that the new role?
Yeah, look, thoroughly and big challenge, but thoroughly enjoyable. Great being over here, and just getting to know everybody in the systems and getting to know the way the Scottish Union run the system. No, everybody's really welcome all the way, and really, really happy with the management team. We've all just got off. There hasn't been a bad word said so far, and everybody's just gone on so damn well. So I'm really, really happy.
We chatted before we came on air. You were looking out the window there at the stadium. You've been to BT Murrayfield before, but you talked about you met Stevie Gemmell. That was one of the guys earlier that you know from the past. How did you meet Stevie, and how did that whole relationship start?
Stevie, myself first met when I coached the Irish women's rugby team. I think it was back in 2003 or 4 and that we met. We started playing each other against coach, and we struck up a really good relationship over the years.
You'll know Scotland well then from facing them in the Six Nations. What have you made of Scotland women over the years that you played against them, and how have you seen them progress over the years?
Always a tough game. Just like the men, you come over here, you're never going to get an easy game against the Scots. They're never going to stand down. And for the first number of years that I played them, yeah, I couldn't beat Stevie. Actually, Stevie slagged me there about a couple of weeks ago. He said, "You actually never beat me, Goose." So, but anyway, so it wasn't until 2006 or so when Stevie left that we actually ended up beating Scotland for the first time. And then, but I've been involved with women's rugby for 25 years. Scotland were well up there. They were number one, two in the Five Nations back then, and always such a stronghold. They've unfortunately slipped a little bit, and their results haven't been going the right way in the last couple of years, but that's what I'm in here for. And I think I have the experience to change that, without a doubt, because I was that soldier back in the day when Ireland couldn't win a game. When I took over first, I don't think the Irish women had won a game for 3 years. They hadn't even scored a try for 2 years. So I know what it's like to be down there, but I know how to get us out of here. So it's paramount that we do well in this year's Six Nations.
Was there anything in particular, like, I know these things take time to change teams and cultures and mindsets, but was there any kind of, what did you do first of all? What were some of the things you could change right away to get Ireland back into that winning form?
It was more education. Just education as a rugby player. They were just trying to do everything as a team first and foremost, but no, I broke it down into the individual and just got the individual's position skill correct, or as best as I could. And I'm not doing anything differently here. I'm really focusing on the individual and trying to get her fitter and her skill base better and her rugby knowledge better. And then that will lead into the unit and lead into the team. That's where I'm going at the moment. I don't have a lot of time. That's what I'm up against, because we've obviously got the qualifiers this time next year. So not as much time, but I do like the base where we're coming from in these girls. Another focus that we'll be really working on is their professionalism within the squad and the way they look after themselves and each other. And their standard will all be standards driven. So we just came off a really good weekend. So we've already set the level on Saturday evening, and then the challenge was we must improve that on the Sunday, and I can gladly say hand on heart that they definitely improved.
You talk about having time with them, but the time you're going to get, you're going to get a 2-week block in South Africa with them, which will be crucial. And I think you mentioned earlier on another interview that this will be the first time this group of players have been away on tour. How important is it from a coach is to get time with the players away and get them to know each other?
Oh, it's critical. It's paramount to the success of, number one, we all know that team spirit is everything. Team spirit comes first, and having that time away with each other that's where we're hoping that we're going to just get to know each other incredibly well. Our positives and negatives, I'm sure there's going to be a falling out or two. There has to be. We're going to be 35, 40 people all the way on tour. Pressure, it's going to be a little bit pressurized, because we're looking, possibly we have to get a win over there, at least one, if not two. And so having that time, we're so glad that the union have backed us to go over there and do this. We can't overemphasize how happy we are to have this, and the girls are actually really jumping at the bit now to get stuck in.
going back to your time with Ireland, you know, you mentioned experience earlier on, but you've had a lot of success there as well. You were the first Irish team to beat a New Zealand national team as well. What's your memories of doing that and also winning, you know, Grand Slams and Triple Crowns? What's your memories of those?
Oh, it's all great memories. Why wouldn't it be? It's a real proud moment of Irish women's rugby. But it was all built on a good solid base, as I just, for the reasons I just explained. Yeah, great memories. Yeah, first senior team to ever win to beat the All Blacks, and Joe Schmidt was a Kiwi coach, still coaching the Irish men, but he was there that day and bought me my first pint afterwards. So that was really, he wasn't too happy at some part of it, but it was happening on the other side. But the Grand Slam was something really special because it was building. We had a fantastic team spirit. We had very experienced players, and but we also had very young players, and you just got a lovely blend. And their rugby knowledge was fantastically high at that time, and it just gelled into this fantastic ball of team spirit. And they weren't scared of anybody. They were literally scared of nobody taking on, because they knew they had the knowledge of where they wanted to go and what they wanted to do. So, and that's... It doesn't say, that's not an arrogant thing to say. It's just just the way it is, and they weren't fearless of absolutely nobody. They took they'd take anybody on.
And I suppose that'll be the challenge from you and the coaching staff, is to instill that confidence into the team you've inherited now, and the team that you will pick going forward, because maybe the wins haven't been there in the past. So slowly, I guess you'll have to build up that confidence to get them into that position.
Absolutely the same. And what we're trying to really work on is these girls to make their own decisions. Mm. I feel maybe before they were a little bit programmed. This is, you have the ball in your hand, you make your own decisions. You have the framework, but you have to, something positive, hopefully, has to happen. And I need to get them talking together. They're sick already of me just saying communication is absolute paramount. That is the key. We need these ladies to make their own decisions on and off the pitch, and help themselves, and then in turn help the team.
And this is all building towards getting to that World Cup in New Zealand. I guess the remit for you is you're going to get them there. And, you know, what's the plan you've got in place then to get them there over the next couple of months? What do you need to do to get them to the World Cup?
We need to get rugby time on the pitch. And thankfully, again, the union have been super supportive. That is paramount. We just need rugby time on the pitch. Also, we obviously need a lot of luck regarding health, make sure everybody's health and fit. And the S&C program that they're on, we've already proved that the rugby player is an awful lot more robust. Mm. And that's what the guys have been working on for the last 8-10 months. And we just did fitness tests the other day, and thankfully the results are coming back positive. So we had the most people training this weekend that we've had in a couple of years. So that's all positive. So we just need that to keep working and keep going forward in that way. And we need a bit of lady luck as well on our side. We're going to peaks and troughs a little bit in the first 6 months of this year, and I'm expecting it. And in some ways I want it, because they need to learn how this all works. We are going to be in a much better place. And I think with the team spirit already, with the girls and their attitude, is just super good. They're super excited, and they're so encouraged of what's going on at the moment.
You look at the landscape of women's rugby in general. You've been involved in the game, I think you said, for over 25 years now. So you'll have been right at the beginning of when almost professionalism, especially in Scotland, came around to where it is now. How much has the game changed, and where do you see the game going over the next few years?
Changed completely, head over heels, from absolutely zero support from when I started with it. The first person that I ever coached as a woman was my wife.
And how was that?
Difficult. Actually, easy on the pitch, but then it's when you get home. Yeah. She got her own back. But Nicola, my wife, was played, and she was also one of the founding members of the Irish Women's Rugby Union back in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. So it came from absolutely nothing. We had no support. Mm. No one wanted to know us. So, many, many years of a lot of hard work from those ladies and that group of people, and just build it up slowly. the women's game has completely changed, though, where we are now. I think it still has a little bit to go.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the French and the English all go fully pro now. Is it a thing for the Scottish women to go fully pro? Maybe not at the moment. I don't think we're right, we're ready yet, but we're definitely working towards that in time, but not just yet. We've got to get a proper base in place, but that's where it's going. For the future, I think it can only get better.
Philip Doyle, thank you very much for your time, and best of luck for those fixtures when they come up.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for listening to the official Scottish Rugby podcast. We'll be back next week to reflect on the match with France here at BT Murrayfield.